Chapter 5. There are times that Stiles wonders if he's ever going to get over his claustrophobia. He can handle it without panic attacks now, at least for short periods of time, but he's never going to be comfortable in small spaces. He really wishes Deaton had a workshop somewhere other than his basement, but he can't exactly suggest that. At the moment, however, he's thoroughly distracted from all that by what's going on. It took about 5 minutes to explain things to Deaton, who then had them bring Chris down into his workshop. Allison, Scott, and Stiles accompanied him. Chris is still unconscious, fortunately, lying on the floor inside Deaton's copper circle. That surprises Stiles, and he wonders if the act of fighting against the spell has been physically tiring for him. He's also distracted by the fact that Allison looks like she's ready to leap across the room and start clawing Deaton's eyes out. "What do you mean you are not sure?" she asks. Deaton lifts his hands, in that passive gesture of surrender that often makes Stiles want to punch him in the face. He respects Deaton, but the veterinarian can drive all of them crazy sometimes. "Allison, I don't think you understand the gravity of the situation. It isn't as..."
"Oh no, I understand the gravity perfectly well," Allison spits out. "I understand that somebody mind-raped my father, and you are going to fix it."
Deaton doesn't flinch. "It isn't as easy as just negating the spell. I can do that without difficulty, but it might not have the effect that you want." Scott puts his arms around Allison from behind, folding them over her chest in a gesture that's meant to comfort, but not restrain. "How so?" he asks. "Consider what had to be done to get Chris to this point," Deaton says, gesturing to the unconscious man in the circle. "This spell had to literally invalidate everything he spent the last 4 years of his life working towards. The understanding, the compromises, it took all of that and convinced him that it was untrue, that he had been lying to himself, that he had been used and deceived. Which is why we need to undo it, pronto," Stiles says. "But just negating the spell won't do that," Deaton says. "Allison, let's say that you suddenly found out that Scott had never loved you," he says, and Allison and Scott both shudder, "but that he had been using you for his own ends. You'd fight against that, wouldn't you? You would tell yourself it wasn't true, but it would keep hammering at you. Imagine the enormity of the evidence weighing upon you. You wouldn't be able to stop thinking about it. You would struggle against it every step of the way, and it would eventually drag you down. And let's say that just as you had gotten to acceptance of that, you found out that he did love you, that it had been a trick."
"Jesus,"
Scott says in a low voice. "Spells like this can destroy people," Deaton says. "This spell took something that was at the core of Chris Argent, that he had built his entire life on, and not only invalidated it, but forced him to accept that invalidation, to act on that invalidation. And now, if we simply undo that, it will be just as messy as the original spell was." "Sort of a reverse mind whammy," Stiles says, pushing both his hands through his hair. "But what else can we do? We can't leave him like this." "I know," Deaton says, "and if you want me to proceed, I will. But I had to make sure you were fully aware of the consequences first. He's going to be confused, hurt. He won't trust you, and he won't trust himself. It could take months, years, to fully heal the damage. And that's if it ever heals at all. People have gone insane, have killed themselves as a result of spells like this." Allison stares at her father's body for a long minute, and her jaw sets. "He's strong," she says, "and so are we. He'll fight through it. We'll make sure he's okay." Deaton nods. "Okay, Allison, you can stay. Scott, Stiles, let us have some space." Stiles is happy to escape the basement. Scott is more reluctant, but he allows Stiles to tug him up the stairs and back into the clinic. He goes out to the lobby to update the others. Stiles sits on the edge of the exam table and waits. He's surprised a minute later when the door opens and Victoria Argent walks in. He says, grimacing. I have to...
Lydia and Derek explain things to me, Victoria says. I don't believe I've been affected, though I suppose anything is possible. I'll let Deaton work dispelling magic on me once he's finished with Chris, just to be on the safe side.
She shakes her head slightly. Chris has been acting strangely for the past week or two. I figured it was stress. Apparently, I should have pushed the issue.
Right, okay. But you might want to talk to Deaton before he...
I don't need to, Victoria says. I'm well aware of the consequences of this sort of magic.
Oh,
Stiles says again, and they sit in silence. Several minutes go by. Then there's a sudden shout from the basement.
Where am I? Chris demands. What happened?
Allison's voice is quieter, and Stiles can't quite pick up the words, only the generally soothing tone that she's using.
No, that isn't.
There's a crash, something being knocked to the ground.
I can't, I'm not.
Victoria gets to her feet and smooths down her skirt. I need to go attend to my husband, she says, and turns to look at Stiles. Under normal circumstances, I would deal with this myself, but Chris is going to need me with him. Therefore, I'm going to have to entrust this to you. You find the people who did this to him, and you make them pay. Is that clear?
Crystal, Stiles says. He stands up as well. I need a plane from here to Chicago. Normally I would ask Chris, but...
I'll set it up and text you the information. Victoria heads over to the trap door and goes down without another word.
Vicky!
Chris's voice is hoarse, almost frightened. Stiles has never heard him like that before.
Vicky, what's happening to me?
Stiles doesn't wait to hear the answer. He heads out to the lobby. The rest of the pack is gathered there, and he sits down with them, not saying anything. Scott has already told them what's going on. Stiles only manages to sit down for a couple minutes before he's up and pacing.
Look, I'm gonna go deal with Phil, he finally says. Derek, you're with me. The rest of you, wait here.
Philip Argent has a sulk on that would make teenage Jackson proud. His arms are folded over his chest and his lower lip is stuck out in a pout. He refuses to look at any of them as Stiles walks into the holding cell with Derek behind him. Jake is sitting in the corner, knees pulled up to his chest.
He won't talk to me, he says, distress coloring his voice.
Stiles tousles his hair automatically.
It's okay. You need a break. Erica, Isaac, why don't you take Jake and go get us some coffee?
Erica nods and slings her arm around Jake's shoulders, giving Phil a dirty look as they leave the office. As soon as the door shuts behind them, Phil says,
So now that you've gotten rid of him, what are you going to do to me?
It's an excellent question, really. Stiles studies Phil for a long minute while he glowers, thinks about what he knows about the Argent family. Enormous pressure has been put on Phil to succeed at this. He's sure of that. He's been indoctrinated to see them as enemies. And unless Stiles can break him out of that mindset, they're not going to get anywhere. Nobody in the universe can be as stubborn as a preteen with a grudge.
So, he finally says, letting the word come out slowly.
Here's what I know. Your mom and dad really hate me and probably hate their cousin. They've convinced you that we're the bad guys. They've told you that the family honor, their reputation, rests on this mission they've given you.
Stiles glances at Derek, who squeezes his hand. Phil's heart rate is up. Stiles' words are hitting home.
And I have to hand it to you, buddy. You've done a great job. Your infiltration was a complete success. None of us suspected you in the slightest. Let me be the first to say you have a great future ahead of you if you do go on to become an actor. You're good, kid. We never would have caught you if things hadn't gone south.
So what?
Phil retorts, still glaring. Well, so now I've got a problem, Stiles says. I'd really like to know who was giving you your instructions. Because you may have been given this mission by your parents, but I really don't think they're the ones who came up with it. No, someone else is behind this, and I need to know who, and what their next move is. Because somehow I feel like they expected this to fail. Phil shrugged. Yeah, well, I'm not going to tell you anything. It doesn't matter what you do to me. Is that right? Stiles asks. Your parents prepared you for that, huh? They told you how I'm going to torture you? They said you put them in a pit and didn't give them any food or water, Phil says. I can handle that. Why do I feel like you know that from personal experience? Stiles asks, his jaw tightening. I'm going to have a few questions for your parents about exactly what sort of preparation you did. But that's a story for another time. As it happens, that's not true. I threatened to stop giving them food and water, but I never actually did. I doubt they mentioned that. You're nothing but a liar, Phil retorts. They told me that you'd lie. Uh-huh, Stiles says. And so now I'm supposed to torture you to get my information. What do you think of that, Phil? That they sent you to do a job that they knew might end in getting you tortured? Phil's jaw sticks out stubbornly. That they know I can handle it? Stiles heaves a long sigh. Kid, let me tell you a universal truth. Everybody breaks. It doesn't matter how much they've prepared. It doesn't matter how proud or how strong they are. When I met Peter Hale, he forced me to help him find my friend. And I did it. I wasn't proud of myself, but I did it. And later, that friend told me that he'd rather I be alive and have betrayed him than been loyal and dead. That's the way the real world works, Phil. You can kill me if you want, Phil says. I'm not going to say anything. After a long moment, Stiles just shakes his head. Okay, buddy, he says. That's how it goes, I guess. He sits down with his phone and starts tapping at the screen. Phil watches him suspiciously. Stiles does this for several minutes, then stands up and says, Okie dokie, let's go. You've got a plane to catch. I've got a... What? Phil asks, flummoxed. I can't torture you, Phil. I am not going to hurt a kid. Especially not one who's been brainwashed into helping bad guys. There's nothing I can do to you. So if you're not going to talk, I'm going to put you on a plane back to your folks. It leaves in a couple of hours, so we better get going. It's just a little commuter plane out of Beacon Hills. You'll have to catch the connecting flight in Fresno on your own. Will you be able to do that okay? You can't just... Phil stammers, but then recovers. You're lying again. You're just pretending to be nice to me. Sure, kid. Come on. Stiles gets him uncuffed from the wall and holds onto his wrist, towing him out to the car. Phil is still processing as Stiles puts him in the Jeep. Jake and the others have caught up with them. Stiles sends Erica and Isaac to Deaton's clinic and then ushers Jake and Phil into the back seat while Derek sits in the front. Stiles turns the car on and heads to the airport. I'd ask if you need to get your stuff, but I guess you showed up with nothing, huh? He says. The whole ran away from home shtick. And I don't see any reason to let you keep the stuff Chris and Victoria got you. You can't do this, Phil says. Why not? Stiles asks. It's not what you're supposed to do. Oh, I'm pretty sure it is, Stiles says. I'm pretty sure that even if you were told that I would hurt you or imprison you or try to do magic on you, that those aren't things I should do. So I'm going to send you home, where hopefully you'll be safe. That is absolutely what I'm supposed to do with a 12-year-old who's gotten caught up in his parents' war. Phil falls silent, trying to hold on to his sulk, but failing. He goes pale when they actually pull into the airport parking lot. Okay, let's move, Stiles says, turning the Jeep off. Jake nods and slides out of the back, subdued and silent. He tugs Phil with him. Derek scowls but trails after them silently. Stiles heads into the airport and checks his watch. Let's get you a sandwich and a drink or something to bring with you on the plane, he says, The flight will be 4 or 5 hours, and I don't know if they'll serve anything. Jake, why don't you run and grab him something and meet us at the gate? He adds, and Jake nods, trotting off towards the small convenience store that the airport has.
Why are you doing this? Phil whines.
Because it's the right thing to do, Styles says again.
You can't!
Phil's lower lip is trembling.
You can't just send me home. They'll be mad at me. The plan didn't work, and they're going to be really mad.
I'm sure they'll understand, Styles says, still heading towards the security gate.
They won't! They won't! They don't understand anything! Please, you can't make me go home!
Well, you can't stay here, Styles says, not slowing his pace. Because I can't trust you, Phil. You tried to hurt my pack, and you succeeded in hurting my friend. How do I know that this isn't some new act? That you're going to make me feel bad for you and use that as a way to get back in my good graces?
You don't have to! You can keep me locked up or something! Just please, please don't send me home! Phil says. Mom's gonna be so mad at me!
We've already been over how I can't lock you up, remember? They've reached the gate. Styles takes out the boarding pass he had printed and smiles at the woman in the security uniform.
He's flying alone. Can you look after him?
He asks, and she nods. Advantages to small-town airports, he thinks. Plus, he thinks he knows her. Her face is familiar. So many people in Beacon Hills know him and the pack that it doesn't surprise him anymore.
I'm sorry. I'm really sorry, Phil says. Please don't make me go, Styles. Please.
Styles sighs. He says, hang on, to the security guard, and walks over to a row of chairs nearby. He sits down and pats the seat next to him. Phil slumps into it. Look, kid, he says, you've got to understand that you've kind of got me between a rock and a hard place here. I can't trust you, but I can't keep you locked up. And if you don't want me to send you home, what am I supposed to do?
I don't know. I just...
Phil rubs a hand over his eyes.
I don't know what to do either. None of this makes sense. You guys have been so nice to me, and you're not anything like what my mom and dad said. And now you... I thought you would try to make me tell you stuff, and it's not... It doesn't make any sense.
He sniffles a little and says,
if I tell you everything, can I stay?
No, Styles says, and sees his eyes go wide with panic. Phil, I can't trust you. What if you told me a bunch of lies?
I wouldn't, Phil says. Can't you tell? I thought werewolves could tell.
It's not really an exact science, Styles says. It doesn't quite work like that. And some of this is really important, Phil. If you lie, it could compromise the safety of my pack. I mean, you obviously passed some hair or something of Chris's off to whoever your contact was. You could tell me you hadn't taken anything else when you had, and if I believed you...
I did, though,
Phil says miserably.
I took some of Aunt Victoria's, too.
Styles sighs. What about Jake's?
No, not Jake's. They didn't want Jake's. They said he was a lost cause.
Phil snuffles again.
Please, Styles. Please, can't I stay?
No, Styles says. But if you tell me everything, I'll send you to stay with your Uncle Julian instead of sending you home.
Okay, Phil says. Okay, Jake says Uncle Julian is nice. I could do that.
Okay, come on, Styles says. Let's go talk to my dad, okay? It's times like this that Styles is very glad that he has such an awesome father he can count on. It's not that he's bad with kids, precisely, but he doesn't have a lot of experience with them. His father somehow manages to put Phil at ease without giving the impression that he'll be a pushover. They wind up sitting in the sheriff's office while Phil hugs his arms across his stomach, studying the floor. Jake is sitting next to him, looking anxious, while Derek waits outside. Everything was different after the last conclave, Phil finally says. Mom and Dad fought all the time. I mean, they would fight a lot before, but they fought all the time. They argued about whose fault the whole thing was. It was like all they talked about. Dad still... He glances over at Jake nervously, but then continues. Dad still insisted that Jake, wasn't his son. Styles also glances over at Jake, but he doesn't look surprised by this. He suspects that Jake has been aware of the possibility for some time, if not the fact. Styles doesn't know whose son Jake is, but it isn't Henry Argent's. Curly hair is a dominant trait, and both Rose and Henry Argent have straight hair. Around the same time is when they took me out of school, Phil says. I was supposed to start middle school, but they decided to homeschool me instead. Dad started taking me out on hunts, while Mom taught me hunter history and strategy and creature lore and all that stuff. She gave me tests every day, and I got punished if I didn't do well enough. He falters then, and Tom gives his wrist a reassuring squeeze. It's okay, son. Take your time. Phil swallows. They said it was really important that I learned and did well, that they were only so hard on me because it was for my own good, and they told me that they only had to do that because Jake had left, that it wouldn't matter if he hadn't. I wanted to hate you, he adds, gaze flickering over to his brother again. But I couldn't. I got your letters where you told me fun stories and encouraged me to act and listened, really listened to what I said when I wrote you, and it was the only thing I looked forward to. There's a long silence while he shuffles his feet back and forth. I sort of figured that you had been tricked or something, that maybe I could get you back and then Mom and Dad would take it easier on me. I knew they wouldn't want that, but I still thought maybe I could do it. He chews on his lower lip. Then, over the summer, Mom told me that they were going to send me here, that I was going to have this big, important mission, and some days she would tell me that I'd better not screw it up, and some days she'd tell me that she knew I wouldn't screw it up, that I was the only one who could do it. She said it would be easy, that all I needed to do was get Uncle Chris and Aunt Victoria to let me stay for a few days and get a hair from each of them. If I could stay longer, could learn about the pack and everything, that would be better. But that first part was the really important part. And you did it, Styles says, just to confirm. Phil nods. I was only here a couple days before I got it. It was easy. Aunt Victoria was out shopping and Jake was at school. Uncle Chris went down into the basement and he was doing some sort of supply inventory, so I knew he would be a while. Then when my mom and dad came to town to look for me, I snuck out and gave it to them. Okay, Tom says. What else did you give them? Anything? Not like stuff, Phil says, but I texted them a lot. Like, Chris would talk about things going on, and I would eavesdrop, and then... His voice trails off, miserably. How about we take a look at your phone? Tom asks, and Styles hands it over while Phil studies the floor. Tom scrolls through the back-and-forth messages for a long minute before he sets the phone down and says to Styles, I think we're gonna need some time to go through this in detail. Styles grimaces, because that probably means Phil had told them a lot, and from the brief look he had taken, he agrees. We'll deal with that later, I guess. Phil, do you know anything about who's actually doing the magic on Chris? Phil shakes his head. Nuh-uh. I know it isn't my mom or dad, though. Do you have any idea who came up with this plan? Styles asks. Did they ever say anything about someone else being involved? No, but... Phil looks up. Dad took a lot of phone calls, sometimes at weird times. I don't know who he was talking to, but he seemed really nervous afterwards. Then he would go talk to my mom, and sometimes after that, they would tell me stuff about the plan. Styles looks at his father. Phone records? That's on you, kiddo, Tom says. You're gonna have to use that computer witchery of yours that I know nothing about. I don't have cause to get a warrant. Okay. Styles takes Phil's phone to find out what his father's number is, then texts it to Danny with instructions. Are you sure your parents are back in Illinois now? He asks.
I think so. They should be anyway. Since I was doing okay, they said they would just keep in touch by text. Dad didn't want to stay because of all the other stuff going on. Something about an ogre hunt? I'm not sure.
All right. Stiles huffs out of breath. He doesn't like the idea of putting Phil on a plane by himself, and he doesn't like the idea of leaving him unsupervised. But he doesn't like the idea of splitting up the pack, either. He can't leave Phil with Victoria because God only knows what's going to happen with Chris, and he's nervous about getting his father too involved. Unfortunately, he doesn't see much of a choice.
Dad, can you keep an eye on him for me? I'm going to head to Illinois to have a chat with his parents.
Tom's jaw tightens, and he looks at Phil as if considering his options for a few long minutes. Why don't I call the local police and have his parents arrested? He finally asks. Phil's eyes go wide with panic, but Stiles is already shaking his head.
I need to know who their sorcerer is, make sure I get everything Phil took from Chris and Victoria, and I need to know whose idea this was. It sure as hell wasn't theirs. Once the police have them in custody, I'll lose my shot to talk to them.
Okay, but why don't we call them here? Tom asks. He clearly doesn't like the idea of his son flying halfway across the country to confront hunters in their own territory. Have Phil text them to let him know things went wrong and he needs their help?
We can't risk tipping them off, Stiles says. I'll be fine, Dad. I'm not afraid of Henry and Rose Argent.
Tom still looks unhappy and starts grasping at straws. You have school tomorrow.
Yeah, I know. I'm not thrilled about it either. But none of us will die if we miss a couple days.
Seeing that his father is just nervous, Stiles adds,
Hey, if it'll make you feel better, I'll call Julian and have him meet me there. He might have better luck with them than me anyway.
Tom huffs out of breath and says, Yeah, okay. And yes, Melissa and I can keep an eye on Phil for you.
Cool. I have to go check in with, like, a dozen different people. I'll let you know once I have my flight info.
He stands up and then reaches out to squeeze Jake's shoulder.
You stay with your brother. Keep him safe, okay?
He says, and Jake nods. Stiles leaves the office and heads back to Deaton's clinic. The majority of the pack is still in Deaton's waiting room. Stiles heads for the inner door, but Scott stands up and stops him. They brought Chris up from the basement a little while ago, he says. When I tried to go in there, he, kind of tried to kill me a little. So you probably don't want to try it.
Jesus, Stiles says.
He takes out his phone and texts Allison to let her know that he's back. She comes out of the back of the clinic a few minutes later.
Hey, how's your dad doing?
He asks, wrapping his arms around Allison's shoulders. She lets out a breath.
He's okay. He's so goddamn confused.
Her voice breaks. I think he's not sure what of the last month is real and what's not. I thought about just telling him it all had been a nightmare, but I guess I can't really do that because it's going to affect us going forward. So I didn't. She takes another deep breath to steady herself.
How are things on your end?
Well, I managed to unindoctrinate Phil a little, Stiles says, and gives them a brief summary of what's happened so far.
Danny, any luck on that info I sent you?
Danny, who's been sitting in the corner of the room with his laptop, looks up and shakes his head. Well, sort of, he modifies. I mean, yeah, I got Henry Argent's phone records, and yes, he does have a lot of recent calls at odd times, from another number that had never been in his phone records before a couple months previous. But it doesn't help much. It's a burner phone. No way to trace it. Stiles chews on his lower lip.
What area code is it?
He asks. 413? Denny types for a minute. Western Massachusetts.
Stoddard,
Stiles says with a nod. Okay. That's at least a little helpful, even if it's not conclusive.
Allison, will you get in touch with Julian and ask him to meet me in Peoria?
Sure, she says. Oh, and Mom has your flight all set up. It leaves first thing in the morning, 8 a.m.
Cool,
Styles says. We can get some sleep first. That's probably not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Allison shifts uncomfortably.
Styles, I want to go with you to Illinois, but I can't. I have to stay here with my dad. He's much more grounded when Mom and I are with him.
Styles nods in agreement.
Yeah, that should be your top priority. We can split into two groups for now, as much as I don't like to split up unless we have to. I'm sure as hell not leaving you here alone. Derek will want to go with me, and Scott will stay with you.
Allison seems to be calming down.
Scott should go with you so you have a medic with you.
I'll take Boyd. Scott's been teaching you most of that stuff, right? Styles asks, glancing over at the other teenager, who nods. Scott puts an arm around Allison's waist and gives her a little squeeze as Styles looks around, mentally dividing the pack in half.
Why don't you keep Isaac with you? He's one of the best fighters. Erica, Lydia, you're with me.
Then I can take Danny and Matt can stay. That way we'll each have a computer person in case we need one. Does that sound good to everyone? He asks, and there's a round of nods.
Okay, Allison says, nodding as well.
Okay, thanks.
Styles squeezes her hand. I'd want to stay in your shoes. You don't have to thank me. Scott can stay the night here with you. But try to get some sleep, okay? He adds, and she nods again. The pack splits up into twos and threes to get their things together. Styles heads back to the den with Derek. The others meet them there after they've gotten their things together. He doesn't even try to sleep. He can nap on the plane, and he's far too keyed up to actually get any sleep without drugging himself. Instead, he bakes. He makes muffins to bring with them on the trip, and cookies for the people who are staying behind. The plane ride will take 4 or 5 hours, and since it's a chartered flight, there won't be any flight attendants or meals. So he makes a bunch of sandwiches and packs it all away in a cooler with some drinks and some fruit. Despite his words of reassurance to his father, he's not exactly sure what they're going to do once they're in Illinois. He has confidence that he can outsmart Henry and Rose Argent, but someone is pulling their strings, and there's so much going on that he doesn't seem to know about. But there's no point in freaking out until he's gotten the lay of the land.